live from the HananiahAutos.com studio. This is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Presented by Kangaroo Express.
Hey, it's the Root.
Jaguars Monday with J.P. Shadrick, Jaguars great Tony Baselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday starts right now.
This is Jaguars Monday from the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. The final Jaguars Monday for the 2014 season.
Very sad. Very sad.
J.P. Shadrick with Tony Baselli in Jacksonville. Pete Prisco joins us again over the phone line tonight from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. What's up, Pete?
What's up, fellas? Blue didn't even acknowledge me, so I didn't want to interrupt you guys.
Oh,
good.
Well, there you
go. That's how we like it.
Well, I mean, you hog the airwaves anyways, Baselli. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, absolutely.
That's what happens. Yeah.
What's good for you is good for you, right, Tony?
Well, I live in your world, Pete.
Hey, well, I'm Pete. It's rubbing off on you. I like it. You're getting selfish like me.
Plenty to get to tonight. The Jags, of course, cleaned out the locker room today. We'll talk about the National Football League, Black Monday, too. Pete, I know you have a number of thoughts about what happened in the league today, and we'll get to all that coming up. Let's start with the Jags, though. 3-13. They finished just short on the drive to end the game in Houston. They were right there in the mix, though, in that game, even though the offense just didn't play well again. Quickly on this game yesterday, Tony, offensively 0 for 11 on third down. Can't happen.
I mean, listen, it's disappointing. I mean, I think everyone was hoping that you'd see improvement. You'd see some consistency come, and you'd hopefully leave the season feeling – you know, good about where this offense and the team overall was going. I think overall team-wise, I still feel good because I like the young players. Defensively, you got to feel good about the direction what they're able to do the last half of the year. I'm a big believer in what Gus and Dave are doing and the culture that they've started here. Offensively, though, boy, you see what you get when you play that many young players and rookies. And just the inconsistency continued yesterday. Now, against a very good defense in the Houston Texans, but well, you can't go in for 11 on third down, and really, I think it was only 112 passing yards. Never had a sense that anything was easy, even when there was easy stuff there, and that there was any real chance that you were going to see a sustained drive throughout that game, and that's disappointing.
Yeah, it wasn't very pretty, that's for sure. I mean, but again, Tony, is it more concerning now that you're at the end of the season than it was 5 weeks ago? I mean, because you kind of expected it to change, and it really hasn't changed that much. And we know Dave Caldwell keeps saying that it's one guy on every play, one young kid on every play, there's a mistake. But is there more concern now than there was 5 weeks ago?
Oh, Pete, I don't know. In reality, probably not. I think just the disappointment that you want to see progress and you want to see improvement, and I don't think we saw that on the offensive side of the ball. And I mean, listen, there were certain guys in certain moments, but just the overall consistency of being able to put things together and grow and kind of form that identity. I mean, what's the identity of this offense going into next year? What do you hang your hat on right now if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars? Now, from a player standpoint, listen, the improvement of Marquise Lee throughout the season. He had a bad game yesterday, put that aside. The young center and guard, Linder and Buenco, that's good. Hearns, you know, Allen Robinson. I mean, so there's a lot of things. Listen, I think, was Blake great this year? No, but I love the fact that he played and got this under his belt. I think that was valuable. And I think we saw things out of him. Like, again, yesterday, at the biggest moments when it matters the most, you know, in those two-minute drives where you have to be able to move the ball, he figures out a way to get it done. That's a positive to me. You know, so there are definitely positives. I mean, it's not like you sit here, it's the end of the world. But just in a general sense, I think when you end the year, when the season's over, you kind of look back and you think back what you were hoping at from the beginning and how the thing played out, and it's just a little bit disappointing. Is it the end of the world? No. Is it time to be in despair or hopelessness? No, not at all. I mean, I'm still very bullish on this team. I think it has a lot of really good young players. They just need to add more players. They need to get better at certain positions.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think again, we've said this for a couple weeks now, and we anticipate this is the way it's going to be. There's going to be youth coming on defense and a little more age coming on offense. And by that, I mean experience. You need some experienced players. And we're not talking about 30-year-old players or 32-year-old players on offense. You're talking about 26, 27, 28 guys when you're supposed to get good that are going to be major contributors in a couple years. And I think that's what that unit is sorely lacking right now. And I'll give you an example. I thought, you know, and I was as big a critic as anybody of Beatles early in the season. He's improved. He's got better. I thought he played, as the season moved along, I thought he was a better football player than he was early in the season. So I think you need more stability from some veterans. And when those guys get in here, then the younger guys are going to get better. They're going to get bigger, stronger, faster. And I think they're going to stop thinking as much and reacting more. And that's what you need in 2015.
Players are one thing, guys, but could there be changes on the coaching staff, on the offensive side especially?
I don't think so. I don't get the sense that's what – I mean, this is just me reading tea leaves, is what Gus is going to do. You know, there's a lot of criticism of Jed, and which is the nature of that position when you're not doing well offensively. And, he'd be the first one to tell you that they need to get better, and they need to improve, and they need to look at how they're doing things, and they need to teach guys better, and they need to, you know, get them better prepared and all the different things, and guys need to make plays. I mean, Jeff and I talked about, and Jeff will come on here in a little bit, about the fact that this team doesn't make the easy plays on offense.
That's right.
And now, is that the offensive coordinator's fault? Is it the offensive coordinator's fault that you can't catch the ball, you don't catch balls that are in your hands? Is it the offensive coordinator's fault that the young quarterback can't hit guys that are wide open on easy throws? Is it the offensive coordinator's fault when you have a protection that we know exactly what everyone's supposed to do and one guy doesn't do it and it leads to the safety? That's not the offensive coordinator, because those are simple concepts. Now, if it was complex things that were hard and they were being asked to do too much, then that's coaching. If they're not being taught right, I'm not saying they don't need to be taught better. That'd be coaching. And I think, every year at the end of the year, every player and every coach, if you want to be good and you want to be great at your job, you have to self-evaluate first before you do anything else. You have to make that very hard, long look in the mirror at yourself, look at your weaknesses, look at your strengths, what you didn't do very well, what you did do well, and then improve on all of it and work on it and be honest about it. And so every guy needs to do that. But this team, offensively, you got to make the easy plays. You got to make the plays that are expected in the NFL that professional football players make.
So Tony, you don't think there's going to – I don't think there's going to be a change
either. I don't
either.
Think so,
and,
no.
And I'll defend Jed Fish a little bit by saying it's hard to call plays when you got that many young players on your roster. It's hard to call plays when you know your offensive line is going to have problems. It's hard to call plays when you got a rookie quarterback. So I'll defend it from that standpoint. I do think that one of the goals of 2015 needs to be to drive the ball down the field more. I mean, that to me is something that when you see other teams and look around the league, the success of other teams, they drive the ball down the field. This team is more horizontal than vertical, and I think some of that has to do with the fact that the offensive line has problems, and you have young receivers and a young quarterback. But in 2015, the ball needs to be driven down the field more.
J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco, Jaguars Monday. Your call's coming up, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We'll come back in a moment. Jeff Loggeman will join us, preview Jaguars All Access on Channel 4 tonight. New system, new routes, new way. The JTA has transformed to be the kind of bus system customers enjoy riding. Their new routes mark the beginning of a new way of doing business at the JTA. And for more information, visit jtafla.com or call 904-630-3100. More Jaguars Monday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Going into the combine and all that stuff was to get to the point of self-correction. So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, it's kind of hard to fix while you're playing. I mean, you watch it and I know what I'm doing wrong and I know how to fix it. It's just you don't really have the time, kind of put the work in to get it to become muscle memory. So that's the thing is, I have a good understanding of what I need to do. Obviously, I'll go, continue to work with Jordan, go continue to seek guys that will help me out and try to continue to learn and get better.
Jaguars quarterback Blake Bortles earlier today. Jaguars Monday continues. J.P. Shadrick with Tony Boselli. Pete Prisco's on the phone tonight. And Jeff Loggeman joins us now.
Let me bring up a point here about Blake Bortles. You know, first of all, I love how he's humble and he realizes what he has to work on to get to be a better quarterback in the National Football League. But let me bring up a point here. At that last drive in that ball game yesterday at Houston, you know, watching that on film, he made every play benefit. I mean, I'm talking about he made every good decision that you could possibly make at crunch time. And he was accurate when he needed to be at crunch time. And to me, that's something that, you know, if you're going to hang your hat on something with Blake Bortles, yes, he's got a lot of work to do. And I said that he's got to make the routine plays look routine. And he's got to make the easy stuff look easy.
That might have been the best point you made all year, in all seriousness, because you said it. Jeff said it before the game.
I've been saying it many times, though.
But I mean that was a point of focus we talked about before the game.
Yeah.
Make the easy ones easy.
But you know, there's some players that can make the easy look easy and the routine look easy, but then when it comes to crunch time, they can't elevate their level of play.
Which he can, obviously.
And that's something that he's done all year long. You know, and whether you call it moxie, competitive nature, it, whatever you want to call it, in that last drive, he was fantastic. That game should have been over. That first down play at the 10-yard line or 9-yard line, whatever it was, that ball was thrown perfectly to Cecil Shorts.
Right through his hands.
Perfectly. We're going to show it tonight on Jaguars All Access. That game should have been over. I mean, that ball was thrown right on the money. Cecil Shorts has plenty of time right in his hands to make the catch. The very last play where he throws the ball kind of in the back corner, he's got a guy closing in right in his face. In an instant, he just lofts it. Now, it didn't work because Cecil wasn't able to keep his feet in bounds, but it gave him a chance. You know, so, I mean, those are the things that I think excite me the most about Blake Bortles, because you look at all season long, two-minute drills at the end of the half or the end of the game, he's given them a fighting chance. And to me, that's a reason to get excited, because those are things that you can't go and work with Jordan Palmer about. You can't go to some passing camp and work on. You either got it or you don't. And so it excites me to the fact that he appears to have that.
It's one of the things I've been saying all year. People ask me questions and about him. I said, listen, here's the deal about Blake Bortles. He has what you can't coach. And his problems are all fixable by coaching. And I'd rather have that than the guy who can do everything that you can coach but can't do the things that you can't coach. And that's what all – and I'm not saying he's going to be a great one. He's a long way from that. But he does have the trait that all the really good ones have, and that's be able to raise their game when it matters the most, when it's the toughest, when it's the most pressure, and not be fazed by it. And he has shown me that this year.
And I was amazing talking to him after the game in the locker room. You could just, I mean, him and a lot of the young players, you could just see that it was like, oh. I mean, it's a long year, that rookie season. And I don't want to say he was relieved because they lost the game or he was happy, but you could just tell that it was a collective deep breath by Blake after that game. Because to be a rookie and to go through everything that he's gone through from the time his season ended at UCF to the point now, you want to talk a whirlwind? I mean, people just can't understand and appreciate what a guy like him goes through for the last essentially 11 and a half months, 12 months. It's unbelievable that what they have to go through. So, you know, congratulations to him, to fighting through injury and be able to play all the games that he was able to play and to fight through and finish and show some moxie. And now it's time to take a deep breath for him and a lot of the other rookies. And then the other thing that was impressive at the end of that game, a lot of these young players are talking about it's time for us to not take steps but to take giant steps. You know, so they realize that they're a young football team and it's their team, and the only ones that are going to control their own destiny are them. And that's a good sign. That's a good sign. You know, Gus Bradley's talked about this before, and Tony, you know it. Back in 95 when it was Tom Coughlin teams, in 96 it became our team. When the players start to take ownership of it and start to kind of lead their own way, that's when you start to feel like you've gotten somewhere. And you could feel this young team start to kind of take ownership a little bit.
Hey, Jeff, I want to ask you this. Do you think you made a good point about the end of the game. There's something to be said about him playing at end of games and end of halves that they can use to grow on moving forward, don't you think? I mean, I just think he plays, I don't know if it's freer, looser, no restraint. He just looks like, at times this season, he's looked like he's been better in those situations.
Well, and that's usually the time when a lot of people have a tendency to get tense, and there's another probably term that I could use to describe it, and it involves peanuts, but I won't use that term. But, I mean, you know, to be able to play loose and to be athletic and to stay calm under pressure, you know, because multiple snaps, Pete, at the end of that game in Houston, the Houston Texans had six or seven guys at the line of scrimmage shown blitz, and he never panicked. He never panicked. You know, and Pete, when you get a chance and you go watch the All-22, just focus in on that last drive. Just watch the last drive. And for the people that have access and subscribe to the NFL Network's, you know, All-22, watch that last drive and look at the entire field from a slow motion perspective and tell me where he could have made a better decision.
Well, let me add this, and it's a kind of a question to you, Jeff, or you know, kind of a topic. I thought during the game and after watching the tapes, there was opportunities for him to step up and stay in the pocket and make plays. Listen, he was getting beat around too, and so I don't fault him for sometimes, you know, trying to roll out and get out of there maybe a little bit earlier than he could have, than he needed to. But for whatever reason, on the last drive, all of a sudden he's climbing the pocket.
Yep.
And pushing it down the field.
Well, you bring up a good point.
I don't
because,
know that all of a sudden it's like, listen, I have to now, and it's do or die.
Well, you bring up a good point because, you know, over the last, not this past game, but in the previous stretch of games, probably prior to Tennessee, weeks 10 through about 13, 14, where he really struggled. At times when the pressure would come, you would see his eyes drop. Whereas early on, the eyes never left down the field, and he would just feel it. Well, in the game yesterday, he would just feel it move in the pocket. And then he reached a stretch there where he was getting hit a lot, and all of a sudden the eyes were dropping. And that all of a sudden starts to make you go, okay, wait a minute here. Is this starting to get to him? Is this going to impact him going forward? But to see him come back out of that little stage to where his eyes went back to staying downfield and then just feeling pressure, that's a good sign. Because a lot of young quarterbacks, when they get into that, David Carr, you know, when he had it when he was a rookie with Houston Texans, when his eyes started to drop, they never came up. But Blake Bortles, his eyes dropped for a little while, and then his eyes have come back up.
Pete, what do you make of all that?
Yeah, and I think that's first and foremost. If a guy's eyes start dropping, you have huge problems. If they stay dropped, you're done. If a quarterback can't see the field and feel the rush and slide away, and the other problem at times for some of these young quarterbacks is when they feel the phantom rush and then get out without even getting to the second read. And I think there are times when they all do it, and I thought that, you know, in those situations where he was asked to play faster and play better, you know, and play more aggressively, I think he played better. And that, to me, is a good sign moving forward. Now, there's a lot of work to be done, and he'll be the first one to admit it, but I think there are little peaks into what he can be and what he will be. And I don't think there's anybody in that building. In fact, I know there isn't. I've talked to a lot of them that thinks that this kid isn't going to be a heck of a quarterback, and I, for one, am included in that group. I still think, you know, we had to do this segment yesterday on our show. Who's going to be the breakout, you know, player next year at the quarterback position? And I really believe that he will be the guy once they, you know, fix a bunch of the spots around him.
Well, and even some of the great ones' eyes drop. You know, watching the Houston Texans versus the Baltimore game. I mean, Joe Flacco's eyes are dropping now.
Go look at the year that the Patriots are 18-0. In the Super Bowl after Tom Brady got hit about 50 times by that pass rush.
And his eyes started to drop.
They all do.
I mean,
you get hit enough, and the difference is the guys who have success can break it very quickly and realize, you know, next game and just start going back to playing how they were.
Jeff, who you got tonight on All Access?
We got one of the bright young stars on the defense. Telvin Smith was like 31 tackles in the last 2 weeks. He has been a tremendous acquisition by Dave Caldwell, and he's exciting to watch now. I mean, he was great on film. Yeah, he's actually going to be one of the focal points of Film Room Friday coming up on Jaguars.com. Mm-hmm. Some of the plays that he made in space, he's unbelievable. When this young man gets a little bit more lead in his pencil, so to speak, a little bit more weight in his britches, he's going to be a fantastic player. Not that he's not a good player already now. I mean,
Jeff, how about the play the multiple plays he made from the backside?
On third and one was one of them.
Beating the backside guard and not making a play down the field, but for like a 1 or 2 yard gain.
Yeah, we're going to have that on Film Room Friday for sure. And let me just go back to the point that you guys were talking about is, the offensive problems. Mm-hmm. You know, they definitely have to look at, I think, what they're doing and what their core principles are. Because, you know, if you look at this offense, I think all season long they kind of tried a little bit of this and they tried a little bit of that. They tried a little bit of this and they tried a little bit of that. But they never really had a core foundation that they were able to identify. And I remember going back to the bye week when Gus Bradley talked about, hey, we need to do self-evaluation and we need to have what we call the Sharpie plays and then we have the grease board plays. And I don't know if they were able to find any kind of Sharpie plays. In other words, the plays that stay in the playbook week in and week out that you just are going to do no matter what. And you're telling the opponent, this is what we do, and you got to try to find a way to stop it. But they were never able to try to find a group of plays that suited them this year in that category. And I think going forward, you got to be able to identify some plays like that. And I think it will help when you get some guys in free agency, but you still, whether you get five guys in free agency or one guy in free agency, you still have to have a core principle, and they need to find it and stick to it.
Tony, what was the Sharpie play for you guys?
Early we didn't really have one. We struggled in 95 and parts of 96. And then when we got on that run in 96, it was, you know, lead with Natron and power with Natron. That's what we ran. And we had, I can remember, 62 semi-go. And it was a play that it was a conversion for Jimmy if he's one-on-one, an option route or something for Keenan. And we ran very few plays, and we ran them over and over again. And then once we – the following year when we went to a zone team, we ran inside zone and outside zone. Those were our core plays. We still had lead and power. We'd do things off to change it up. But when we were going to run the ball – we ran inside zone and outside zone.
And I think that's what we did. That's what made Tom unique, and that you're talking about going from 1 year, 1996, to having Natron Means running the lead and power, to all of a sudden having Fred Taylor to run in the inside zone and the outside zone. And I think that this year, you know, you kind of took a square peg and tried to put it in a round hole with Toby Gerhart running the zone play. It's not what Toby does. You know, and so I think that they probably should have had some plays for Toby, had some plays, you know, for other guys that that really kind of fit their needs. But Toby's not a zone player.
Well, I'll just kind of end it with this. I was in college the day John Robinson got hired, and he was talking about what we were going to do, and we were going to be a power run team, and we were going to run this play and this play with about two plays in name, and we were going to be good at it. And we were going to run it, and we were going to run it, and we were going to run it. And that's who we were going to be as far as the running
ball. You go all the way back to Vince Lombardi. Okay, we get a seal here, and we get a seal here.
Old buck sweep.
And we run it up the alley. I mean, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about Sharpie plays. You know, that's what you do, and good luck trying to stop it because we're really good at it.
And then we'll have things off of it once you try to stop that and put you in a bind.
Hey, have a great show tonight.
Hey, and
Jeff,
by the way, on the film room tonight,
yes,
we're going to look at some of those key plays that made me excited about Blake Bortles on the last drive.
That's tonight at 7 on Channel 4, Sam Kavaris, Jeff Lagerman, and Telvin Smith coming up. We appreciate it, Jeff, throughout the season, our last show tonight. Thanks for coming on.
Enjoyed it, boys.
Each and every week. Back in a moment, your calls. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. More with Pete Prisco and Tony Boselli in a moment. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
You know what my mindset is? Just make sure I can come back stronger. You know, I'm not gonna let it get me down. I've always thought, you know, ACL in football is the worst injury that a football player can have. So I'm not gonna let it get me down. I'm gonna continue to work, stay positive about it, and you know, hopefully have a surgery soon.
Jaguars defensive tackle Cindric Marks earlier today. He is going to go under the knife very soon for a torn ACL. Jaguars Monday continues. JP Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco is on the phone tonight from Fort Lauderdale. Tell you what, that's a bummer in the last game of the season, having Marks go down like that, Tony.
Well, he's your best defensive lineman and most productive defensive lineman, so you hate to see it. And unfortunately, it's something I understand. I, I tore my ACL the last game of the year. It was actually a January 1st game in 99 against the Bengals. And it's a very long process, but I was able to come back and start week one and play 16 games. And I didn't feel like I was back to my old self until probably about week 7 or 8, but I was able to play and play at a good level and was able to make the Pro Bowl that year and everything else. And so it can be done. And you've seen other players do it, but it's going to take him being very dedicated to the rehab process. And also, if there's no other damage, I was fortunate it was only an ACL. There was no cartilage or any other damage, and they won't know that until they get in there and see the extent of the injury. But it hurts, and it makes you wonder, is it something you have to add depth to the defensive line because of it going into next year?
Yeah, and you know what I'll say to that? With the third pick in the 2015 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select defensive tackle Leonard Williams from USC.
Well, that's who I'd take because he's a guy who can play three positions for you. He can play a six technique. He can play the four technique, the big four technique that they like to play, and he can play a three technique.
And don't forget, I mean, Roy Miller has some knee issues too, so he might have to go under the knife at some point in the next year.
Yeah, but
it's not as bad.
My guess is his is a scope and not a big deal.
Right.
You know what I think, though, Tony? Now that Jaguars have to be concerned about whether the Titans will take a quarterback with the second pick, and it's pretty much a given that Tampa Bay will take one of them. But, you know, you hear rumblings coming out around the league from Tennessee that they're going to stay the course with Mettenberger and might pass on taking a quarterback at number two. So what they might need to do is, you know, the Titans might try and drum up some interest to get somebody to jump up there and get the other quarterback. And then Jacksonville will sit there with the choice of having the best defensive player in the draft.
Yeah, that's my – I mean, I think Tennessee's either going to take quarterback or trade out of there for someone who's going to want Mariota or Winston – what's his name? Winston,
Jameis Winston.
You might have heard of him.
Yeah, that guy. Or listen, Pete, they need offensive weapons. Maybe they sit there and take an Amari Cooper or someone like that at number two.
Yeah, and then Jacksonville would have the choice of the best defensive player in the draft. And I think that's a good situation for a team that needs to get younger on defense. And so, we don't know what's going to happen in free agency. We don't know who's going to get, you know, released, who's going to get signed. All that stuff will play out before that. But right now, if we had to do a mock draft, that's how I would see it go, and I think they'd end up taking Leonard Williams. And I'll say this, watching him, and I got some tape of him the other day, and I went and watched some. Whoa-wee, is he good.
Yeah, he's a special player. He is a special defensive lineman. And we just saw a pretty good one in J.J. Watt and saw the – and I'm not saying he's going to be J.J. Watt, but you can see what a major force on the defensive line can do and how disruptive they can be.
But he can do that kind of stuff, though, Tony. I mean, you know, you don't want to ever say a guy is J.J. Watt, but he can do that kind of stuff, line up inside, line up outside, use his hands. I mean, he's that kind of player.
I'll tell you this, J.J. Watt wasn't what he was in college. In fact, I'm still trying to figure out why J.J. Watt wasn't better in college. I mean, he was good enough to be a top 15 pick, but he was not the dominant player he is now.
Okay, here's another one. Why was Odell Beckham not as good in college as he is in the NFL?
Well, probably because part of the sometimes in the college offense you play in can limit what a wide receiver does. As far as
they had a pro style offense. Cam Cameron was the offensive coordinator.
Yeah,
and he had Mettenberger, and he had Landry, and he had Jeremy Hill. I mean, that offense, they were loaded.
How'd they not score more points?
Yeah, I mean, mystifying. And yet, when he gets to the NFL, he's even better. And I think this kid will be better, just like J.J. Watt will be better when he gets to the NFL.
Hey, it's time for your favorite part of this show, Tony.
Let's go. Light him up, baby.
Let's go to the phone lines. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Terrence is on the north side tonight. What's up, Terrence?
Hey, Pete, Tony. I was calling. Tony, I want to mention about Blake real quick and then, you know, ask you about the offensive line. Ask you about the offensive line. And JP, doing all right?
Yeah, man.
Blake, I just like to see him get smarter about the game so he can try to make things a little bit easier. And, but as far as offensive line, what about, and I heard another team did it yesterday, they did it on the right side, moved the right guard to right tackle because the right tackle got hurt. I understand that. But why not switch Beatles to the left tackle and put Joker inside because I see.
Wait, listen. No, you listen to me. Listen to me.
Did you call the post game?
Hold on. Time out. I just want to make sure before I go any further and lose my mind. I heard you correctly because I actually tuned you out for a second there, to be quite honest. I just want to make sure I wasn't hearing things in the headphones. You said you want to move Jokel inside to guard and put Zane Beatles at left tackle?
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Terrence. Have a happy new year.
Good night and good luck. He called last night, too. He snuck in again tonight. He called in the postgame show.
Did he say the same thing?
Yes.
It's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Pete, what do you? That's unbelievable.
Yeah, look, and people are piling on Jokel. He hasn't played that well. He hasn't played up to the expectations. If I wanted to, say what kind of season he had, I'd say he had a bad season. He wasn't good. Now, this is an off season to get better. And I said this all along. I think he needs to spend time with you, Tony. I think he needs to work with you and get better. He needs to learn the tricks of the trade. He needs to get stronger. But way too early to call him a washout. But nobody's going to sit here and say he's been a good football player because he hasn't been.
So you'd move Zane Beatles to left tackle, too?
Heck no!
You said he's playing better, Pete. I mean, geez, come on. Let's go to the south side and say hi to John. What's up, John? How are you?
Hey, guys. So I want to talk about the quarterback a little bit. I looked at Blake, his first 6.5 games. He threw 8 touchdowns, 11 picks. His last 7 games, 3 touchdowns, 4 picks. He's regressed to a point now where he's basically Blaine Gabbert with legs. I feel like we got to look at the second or third round. If he falls on his face again next year, we need a guy to put in there besides Henny guys. I think we got to be realistic about this and quit trying to hope that there's something there when his head's down. It's not coming up, in my opinion. What do you guys think?
Right. Well, you're wrong.
Yeah, you're dead wrong. And I watched every game live and watched it on tape, every play, and studied it. And were there times his – you know, for a small stretch like Jeff talked about, he might have felt the rush a little more than he should have and looked at it a little bit. Yeah, but nothing more than anyone else who's getting sacked 71 times, and some of them being his fault, has done in the past. And if you watch him, you're not going to draft a guy after a one-year sample size of a rookie quarterback and drafts, especially on a team where you have so many other needs, and draft a guy in the second or third round. And I am being realistic, and I think he's going to be good. I think Blaine Gabbert is going to be a good quarterback. Am I saying he's going to be a great quarterback? Not ready to say that. But I'd bet a lot of money he's going to be good.
Freudian slip. You mean Blake Bortles. You said Blake Gabbert.
Oh, sorry.
Tony.
Well, he got me all flustered comparing him to Blaine Gabbert. Blake Bortles. Sorry.
Yeah, and look, to compare him to Gabbert is just stupid. I mean,
they're two different guys. It's not even close.
Right. It's not the same situation. One thing that, you know, and Bortles will be the first to tell you, need to work on his mechanics. You know, the mechanics have slipped as the season went along. Here's the other thing. He didn't throw many interceptions in the second half of the season. What, the last 5 games? What did he throw?
4.
1 or 2? Was it 4 in the last 5 games?
Maybe
not have been that many.
Yeah, I don't think it was that many. Maybe 3.
No, it wasn't. I think it was only like a couple in the last 5.
We lost Pete.
We'll get back with
Pete. Stop paying the phone bill,
Pete, in just a moment. We're off to a rousing start. So the first 2 calls, they want to move the last 2 first round draft.
Awful calls to end the show.
I mean, come on,
give me a break.
We're off to a rousing start. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Yes, more of your calls coming up. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Injuries, man. You know, I think that was the biggest thing, especially when you have injuries that you never had before. You know, a lot of my injuries consisted of injuries I never had before that I thought I'd be good at, you know, that I was great at in college. That, you know, I had things to worry about. But, you know, going through that process is a positive. You know, I got the opportunity to now I know how to, you know, treat those things, you know, not to where if I do feel something, I can handle it, you know, to where, you know, this year I didn't know how to handle it, and I was mostly freaking out, you know, and trying to rush things rather than, you know, just staying calm and just handling it like I'm supposed to.
That's Marquise Lee, Jaguars wide receiver, earlier today on Getaway Day after the Jags finished the 2014 regular season. Final edition of Jaguars Monday tonight. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli in Jacksonville, Pete Prisco back on the phone line from Fort Lauderdale. We lost you, Pete. We've got you back, though.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I could hear you guys, and then all of a sudden you guys couldn't hear me, so
you
I'm back.
You forget to pay your phone bill?
No, I don't. CBS pays my phone bill, so I don't think they have that kind of problem.
What do you make of Marquise Lee? Yeah, he didn't have a great game yesterday, but as a core, there's a core group of guys now, these young receivers. Allen Robinson will be back and ready to roll next year. Allen Hurns had a great year. Marquise Lee came on strong later in the season. That's a good start, Pete.
Yeah, and I'll say this. There's also the possibility, as small as it may be, that a certain other big receiver might be back on the roster if everything goes right. And if that's the case, you have this. You have a speed guy in Marquise Lee. You have a big physical guy outside in Allen Robinson, and then you got a guy who's strong and physical in an Anquan Boldin sort of way in the middle of the field in Justin Blackmon if he can come back. They might add another receiver, maybe a speed guy like Torrey Smith or a guy, Randall Cobb if you want to go spend a lot of money. So to me, I look at that receiving group, and it has a chance to be really good and maybe get a veteran in there to help teach those guys a little bit, and then they can move forward from there.
What do you think, Tony?
Listen, I think Marquise Lee got better throughout the season. I think early in the year, I think everyone was frustrated, including him.
Yeah.
And I think there was just the understanding what it meant to be a pro and the mental aspect of it and getting comfortable with the offense. And I thought hats off to him because he really took it like a pro and got better, and you saw great improvement. I do think they'll try – I think they will add a veteran guy, whether it's a Randall Cobb or Torrey Smith. I don't know who's going to be out there.
Cecil gone?
My guess is yes, if I was guessing. I don't think he'll be back. You can't count on Justin Blackmon. If he comes back, it should be viewed as a bonus. You wish him the best. Everyone in this building loves Justin Blackmon because he's a very good guy and has just struggled with an addiction issue. And you hope he's back, but at the same time, you have to be realistic that he's one bad decision from being gone again. And so I don't think you can plan around Justin Blackmon. You have to treat that as a bonus if he does come back.
Yeah, exactly. But if he comes back,
oh, it's great.
He's clean.
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, then all of a sudden you got a nice group of guys there. And here's the one I kind of wonder about. What do you do with Mercedes Lewis?
Well, he's a huge number. I think it's $8 or $9 million of base salary next year. My guess is they ask him to take a significant pay cut, or they cut him?
Significant as in more than half, like, $2 million a year, maybe?
3 to 4.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay him that. I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't pay him that. I don't think he gives you what he used to give you, which was he's not a great blocker anymore.
He's not as good as he was. He's not as good as he was, that's for sure. He
did
not
have it. That was his calling card.
He did not have a great season in that area like he has in the past.
And that was his calling card. So how can you pay him? Why would you pay him $3 to $4 million a year? You can go get a grunt blocker, inline guy, to do what he can do for peanuts. I wouldn't pay him. If it was me, I'll be honest with you, I'd set him free. I'd cut him off my team. I wouldn't have that number on my books.
And they might.
Let's go back to the phone line, guys. One more call before the break. Chris on the north side. What's up tonight, Chris? How are you?
That's the west side, actually.
Oh, no, west side. Sorry. What's up?
No worries. Matt, I'm going to miss you guys. Why is this to be the last show? I mean, why can't you do it year-round?
You have to talk to the boss. call in and ask for the boss of the radio shows and he'll tell you why.
We would love to do it year round because I could make Baselli, I can abuse Baselli in the face off year round. That would be great.
Yeah, we only do what we're told. It's a very simple process around here. It's you do this and we do it.
You're talking about big numbers. Tony has a big number, so that's why.
Yeah, maybe they're trying to cut salary cap. Cut me.
I can't be the only one that feels this way. Anyways,
call them. Let them know.
Yeah, I'm not an X's and O's guy, but I think I can recognize production when I see it, and I got a high light and low light over the entire season. First of all, Dave Caldwell, when he met in the offseason with season ticket holders, he was asked, what is the most reasonable area to expect improvement in? And he said, rushing offense. And I think it's been the biggest disappointment of the season, that we, in fact, have regressed a little bit in rushing offense. But as far as the highlight goes, I am so impressed in our defense production. We are sixth in the NFL in sacks, and I can guarantee you we are not sixth in pressures. We got every bit of production out of the pressures we did get. I'm very impressed.
All right. Thanks for the call tonight.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think stats-wise, the running game was better than last year, just from a pure stats, but I don't think it's the improvement that anyone was looking for in this building.
The Jaguars, by the way, finished first in the league in sack forced fumbles this year. They had another one yesterday and a new franchise record for forced fumbles overall. So a good year.
Not enough interceptions, though.
Yeah, only six. One yesterday was their sixth. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more of your calls, more with Pete Prisco and Tony Boselli. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. The second hour, the final hour for the season of Jaguars Monday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HennanyAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Hour two of Jaguars Monday. J.P. Shadrick with Tony Boselli in Jacksonville at the HennanyAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. And Pete Prisco, CBSSports.com senior NFL columnist on the phone line from Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Senior.
Senior is the key word there. 355-NFL-1.
Much more junior in size, though.
Much more.
Yeah, but you know what, Tony?
Actually not in width. He's like senior width.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Senior width, junior height.
I want to know.
You're like a square.
Did you gain 16 pounds over the Christmas holiday?
Oh, my gosh, Pete. I'm so fat. I'm so fat that there's two pieces of pizza in here, and I'm turning them down.
I've never seen this before.
No, you're not.
It's a true story.
I'm having a hard time to breathe. It's hard to breathe. I'm fearful for my health. I could go down anytime. That's how fat I am right now.
When you talk about your dessert eating, like your cookies and cake,
oh, it's unreal.
You went to town.
Oh, Pete, it was embarrassing. And last night, I'm trying to do good, and I walk in, and there's this homemade lemon pie with homemade whipped cream that my mother-in-law made. And I killed it. And guess what? If there's a piece left when I get home, I'm hoping my boys ate it all. Because if there's a piece left, even if I don't want to eat it, which I don't want to eat it, I don't. Everything in me is saying don't eat it. I guarantee you I'll eat it. It's impossible.
By the way, speaking of your boy, congratulations on having an all Times Union player on your
house. Oh, yeah, all First Coast team, whatever it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
He made first team. It was good.
You don't get the paper?
I get the paper.
Oh, okay, good.
I just said
it looked like you didn't.
No, I knew.
Know that.
Okay. Yeah, I knew.
Well, good.
No, it was a very nice honor.
Yeah, very nice. How about some more phone calls here, guys?
Well, I hope they're better than the debacles we've had.
Yeah,
I mean,
we're on a roll.
We've had three calls. One was good. The very fair question. The first two were so bad that they should be banned from ever calling again.
355.
Zane Beatles, the left tackle, is the dumbest thing. You're not dumb, caller. I want to make sure I'm clear. But that's the dumbest thing I've heard all year. I mean, is there anything dumber we've heard all year?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, Tony.
Joe?
No, he's thinking about it. Pete, what do you think?
No? We've had some dumber ones.
No!
We've had dumber ones.
What? Zane to left tackle?
I mean, some of the things that have come out of Boselli's mouth have been pretty dumb.
How many fire?
We haven't had anything from a caller that's dumb.
How many fire Dave Caldwells have we
had?
That's okay. I mean, I disagree, but that's fans. Just they want to fire everybody when it's not going good. I mean, everyone gets fired. But moving your left guard to left tackle when he's not a tackle, he's a guard body. He plays guard. He's never. I mean, I've never heard of that before.
Hey, Tony, I do want to ask you this. Is it time to take the kid gloves off of Jokel?
In what sense?
When handling him and talking about him? And by that, I mean...
Well, I mean, who has kid gloves when they talk about him?
You did.
I call it how I see it, Pete.
You handle him with kid gloves because he's kind of like the young protege. You think him, you know, you're going to take him under your wing, which you should do. But he... There's no way to describe the way he played this year other than disappointing.
Well, I don't know about that. I think he would. If Listen, what are you comparing it to? Are you going to compare it to the rest of the left tackles in the league? Then he played average. Are you comparing it to what his talent level is? Then he didn't play up to his talent level at all. Are you comparing it to the fact that he's a high-level athlete with great feet and plays hard and is a pro and wants to be good? Then you know what? He has a ton of upside. Is there technique things he needs to work on? Absolutely, and I've said it all day long. I've talked about his hand use and different things that he needs to do to work on. Those need to get better. Does he need to get a little bigger and stronger? Absolutely. No one's saying. Gus Bradley said that. So I don't know where the kid gloves. There's been no gloves as far as the fan reaction and what people have said about him. And to my point, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but I just think at times when we, you know, when you've talked about him, you because you like the kid, you want him to succeed. He's a nice kid, and I mean, like yesterday when he put his head down, how does that happen?
Pete, I can show you 50 times a year, maybe a week, that left tackles or right tackles put their head down and get beat because they don't use proper technique.
Okay, maybe I'm spoiled because like I always say about the old generation when you were there, and I don't. I'll be honest with you. I don't remember you ever putting your head down. I don't remember.
Well, it's not good. Let me tell you, if you put your head down, you're going to get beat. That's why I tried not to do it.
So what is the reasoning? Why would somebody even attempt to put their head down?
Because
what's the point of that?
His head went down because he reached for J.J. Watt because my guess is he thought the bull rush was coming or a power move was coming, and so he started reaching for him or mistimed his punch. And J.J. did a nice move, kind of pulled the shoulder and turned his hips and got him leaning and then used his momentum against him, went right around him and caused a sack fumble. It's not good. It was a bad play. I said it on the air yesterday. You can't do that. But to bury the kid because he gave him a sack against J.J. Watt or because he used his bad tech.
I'm saying
in general that's what people have done this year. I mean, give me a break. I mean, the kid, I think he got better. I think you can see him working on things. He needs an offseason to get bigger and stronger. And he needs to work on technique, which he will. The kid wants to be good. I've been around too many guys in this league and watched this league too long when you can tell when guys aren't honest with themselves. He is honest with himself. He knows he needs to get better. He will be better. And I think he's going to be a good left tackle in this league. And I'm not going to change my opinion of that based on this 1 year, his first year playing left tackle in the NFL.
And you would know better than anybody. So,
I mean, I
trust
you. I can go through a lot of tapes of guys who turned out to be good players that, I mean, I just think people are completely off base on it. I agree. If people are disappointed because they want him to be better, I'm fine with that. He wants to be better. But to bury him and say he's no good and he can't do it and move Zane Beadle's left tackle, which is just hilarious, or go draft a guy. I mean, I got people saying they should draft an offensive lineman in the first round. That's ridiculous. Come on. You're not going to do that. Or they need to go sign a left tackle.
They will sign one. Yeah.
A left tackle? They're not going to sign a left tackle.
No, they're going to sign some veteran linemen and free agents.
Well, I'm fine with that.
Help.
Bring competition in. It'll make everyone better.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think they need to draft a tackle in the first round or the second round, but they need to sign some veterans to get the competition level up, and he needs to elevate his game by getting stronger in the weight room and spending time with you. Right. And I'm going to, in defense of Luke Joko, I'm going to say this. The left tackle position, I say it every week, is not very good in the NFL. To me, the guys that have played well this year, Andrew Whitworth has been phenomenal for Cincinnati. It's taken him a long time to get to there, but he's one of the best left tackles in the league. And he's not elite of the elite. Ryan Clady's play has slipped in Denver. You know, Tyron Smith has been good. He hasn't been great. Joe Thomas has been good. He hasn't been great. I mean, you look around the league. It's a tough position to play with so many looks now and so much speed. But these guys aren't getting to the level that you need your left tackle. Most guys are not getting to the level you need your left tackle to play at.
So Tyron Smith, very good young player. I'll go pull up tape and show everyone plays where he gets beat for sacks and uses poor technique. Very, I mean, it wouldn't take long. It wouldn't take long.
They all do, Tony.
My point, that's my point. They're young guys. These are young players. Tyron Smith's a young player. Luke Jokel's a young player. Listen, he's going to get better. I'm not worried about the left tackle position. I'm just not.
Okay.
Let's go back to the phone line, guys. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Rick in Fleming Island wants to talk about the quarterback. What's up, Rick?
Hey, gentlemen. I'm going to miss this show on Monday night. It's become a staple. So,
well, you can listen on Thursday. Thursday show continues starting this week. Yeah. What's up?
Do they actually let you – I know there's an offensive line coach, but if you wanted to go spend an hour or two with Jokel, they have no problem with that?
Listen, I have a great relationship with the coaching staff, and Luke Buckus is someone I like and respect and think he's a very good coach. My job is to talk on the radio and to analyze and to say dumb things and let Pete Prisco make fun of me and analyze the game. That's my job right now. My job is not to coach offensive line. It is not to go teach Luke Jokel or any of those other offensive linemen what to do. They have a coach, and they have a good coach. Do I talk to those guys if they ask me questions? Absolutely. I like them. Luke Jokel's a great young man. I like Linder, Buenco, Pazdor. I like Beatles. I mean, I like those guys. They're good people, and I think they're going to be good football players, and I saw a lot of things that I like. But my job's not to coach them.
All right. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. That sounded like coach speak, Tony.
No, it's not. It's not my job.
I mean, yeah, and he heard me say, like he's saying, he heard me saying that you know, if I was the kid, I would spend as much time picking your brain and trying to get some of your tricks of the trade as I could, because that's what you do in our business. That's what you in any business. You want to get better, and if I want to get better, I want to go to the people that I trust that can help me, and you can help him. I'm not saying the coaching staff can't. But they haven't played left tackle at the level that you have played left tackle. And to me, that means something. So that's why I say the kids should pick your brain as much as possible.
Let's go back to the phone lines. John in Keystone wants to talk about Bortles. Well, the last guy wanted to talk about Bortles. We never got there. What's up? How are you, John?
Following up on Pete, I think every time he walks by, and Tony ought to just slap you upside the head. Just kind of giving you a little bit of toughness, right?
Yeah, I think
I need toughness.
No, you want me to I think he's saying he wants me to walk by Luke Jokel and slap him upside the head. Is that what you're saying, John?
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
Okay. First of all, let me just explain something to you. I have two shoulders that don't work. One doesn't work at all, and I have two fake hips. Luke Jokel whipped my rear end right now if I slapped him upside the head. So let's just make sure we're clear on that. I'm in no position. I can't even slap my own 17-year-old upside the head without him whipping my rear end.
Hey, Tony, then headbutt him.
Well, I mean, listen, that would hurt.
He's got a big head.
I got a big head. Yeah. That's my best chance. But as soon as he – I can't run as soon as he became conscious again.
Tell me this. Are they allowed to, on their own, work with other players and stuff on the off season, like go to, like,
yes,
one of the high schools and stuff like that?
Yes. They are.
Well, I think then the Bortles ought to get with his receivers and see if he can do kind of that stuff.
I'm sure he will.
The best pass of the whole season was the last game. It was a nice, tight spiral, and he didn't throw it.
What are you talking about?
I said the best pass of the season was a nice, tight spiral on the last game of the season, and he didn't throw it.
That wasn't the best pass of the season, but that's very funny. Thank you, John. Have a good night. Happy New Year.
Good night.
Another ridiculous comment. Keep going.
Good luck.
Dial up the next one.
By the way, there's a certain quarterback in Denver who's thrown for a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns, not throwing tight spirals.
He hasn't thrown one yet. His name's Peyton Manning. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Next caller. Let's go.
Mary in Riverside's been hanging on tonight. Wants to talk about the field in Houston. What's up,
Mary? It's awful. That's all you need to know, Mary.
It is, and you used to work there. Listen to me. You used to work there. You used to play there. But, I mean, their own players are getting hurt. My son and I were watching it. We were nervous the whole time. It is awful. So many players have gotten hurt, and I cannot believe that the commissioner, I don't know what, but somebody needs to do something about it, because it's very important, valuable. Any player is valuable. But, like, I mean, really?
Yeah, Mary, I was on the field beforehand walking around. And for everyone listening to understand, the Houston field is in plates. It's natural grass, but they come in plates, like 3x3.
Yeah, maybe bigger than that, 10x10-foot squares.
Is it 10x20-foot? Yeah, okay.
Large squares of grass.
Large squares of grass, whatever it is. And they put them together like a puzzle. And I was walking around there, and the seams between the plates are remarkably awful. The field is terrible. The NFL, the commissioner, whoever's in charge, needs to step in and change the field. It's not safe. It's not.
This is not
professional football. It's the number one sports league in the United States, arguably in the entire world. And you have a surface that is wouldn't be suitable for high school kids. And they need to fix it.
I mean, they're talking about concussions and everything, and as they should. But there's also other injuries that are occurring, and they're not paying attention to them.
I'll say this: hit me in the head before my knee blows up.
Yeah. Well,
you sent that tweet out last night. You sent that tweet out last night to me, and we were in agreement on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank
and
you.
Other thing I wanted to say is I do like Blake Bortles, and everybody better get off his case.
I agree,
and
Mary.
That's all I have to say about that.
Mary, happy New Year's.
Thanks for the call, Mary. We appreciate it. Pete, how do they do that? How do they get the field fixed in Houston? How does that work?
Well, hey, look, they got to get a new system in there. It's quite evident that what they have there now isn't working. And if I were a Texan player and I had to take that field, you know, take to that field 10 times a year, I wouldn't be real happy about it. Bobby Mayer spends a lot of money, he'll fix it.
I was told that Bill O'Brien, it's a point of contention with him, and he's not happy with the field.
You know Bob McNair, he's not going to sit there.
Oh, Bob McNair is one of the best owners in the NFL.
Correct. He'll fix it.
Let's get one more call in for now. Mike on the south side. Let's talk about Luke Jokel again. Why not? What's up, Mike?
Yeah, I think the thing that was evident yesterday was that Sam Young, a backup, did a better job of handling J.J. Watt than Luke Jokel did.
All right. Thanks for the call. Tony, you're in disbelief right now. What?
What's up? I'm not. So what's your point?
He's gone.
Oh.
Yeah, he's gone.
Okay. Thanks. Great call. Next call. Let's do one more call.
Well, remember, last game, Watt lined up across from Young most of that game.
He moves around.
Right.
He goes all over the place. Listen, right. Sam Young did a nice job.
All right. Let's go one more. Let's make it a good one to finish.
I mean, I don't. There are two different positions. I mean, Sam Young can't play left tackle. If that's your question, he can't.
Right.
He's the right tackle.
He's a right tackle. Steve in Fleming Island wants to
he's
talk
not
about.
Not athletic enough to play left tackle. He's a right tackle. He did a good job, and he's a very valuable part of this team as a swing tackle. I mean, he did a good, nice job.
You know who else is not athletic enough to play left tackle?
Zane Beagles.
Yeah. Steve in Fleming Island wants to talk about the coordinators. What's up, Steve?
Hey, first of all, I can't play left tackle either. But
I can't either anymore.
Yeah, apparently not.
So here's a question just about offensive coordinators. You know, a lot of folks talking about, you know, obviously Jed Fish and I guess somewhat a little bit about Babich. And I know Gus really runs the defense. But the question is, Pete mentioned earlier, you know, people got to get better in the offseason. What's the process like for an offensive and defensive coordinator in the offseason? How are they coaching themselves up?
Thanks for the call. Good question.
Pete, you want to go first? You want me to?
Go ahead.
Listen, every coach, every staff, what they do at this time of the season, they first will start, they'll self-scout themselves and go back and evaluate everything they did, good, bad, indifferent, ugly, across the board, and look at where they need to improve, see if there's any tendencies, anything that they, you know, are giving away or getting stuck in ruts or whatever it might be. And they will evaluate everything they do. And then they will go back based on that information and meet as a staff and start making changes and get a game plan of what they want to be and what they do well and what they need to work on and what they need to focus on for the coming year.
Yeah, it's the next couple weeks is all self-scouting. You go back and you figure out what worked and what didn't. You go through your playbook. You know, you tailor it to what you have. If there are plays that, you know, you ran for Blake Bortles that he didn't like or didn't work, then you get him out of there and you go do some other stuff. Then you go, you know, study other people. Find out what they're doing. If you like, you know, something you see on tape from another team, you steal it. That's what everybody in the league does. Then you start working on, you know, doing your draft stuff, your free agency stuff, and then it's on to, you know, all that, signing guys, bringing them in, going to the combine. onto the league meetings and then right into the draft and, you know, OTAs, mini camps, and next thing you know, it's July again. I mean, there's no time off.
You know what's next, guys?
Uh-oh. I'm down one.
The Copy Fax Face-Off has come down to the final show. Frisco has the lead 9-8. We'll see if he can close it out tonight or if there will be overtime. That's coming up in a moment.
Might be overtime.
We might get us more calls, too. We'll see. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. The Copy Fax Face-Off after this. More Prisco and Buscelli. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HenneneAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Jaguars Monday rolls along. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Buscelli in Jacksonville at the HenneneAutos.com studio at Everbank Field. Pete Prisco is on the phone line tonight from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He's on assignment with CBS Sports the last couple of weeks. Where are you going for the playoffs, Pete, by the way?
Indianapolis.
Oh, the Colts, huh? All right.
Where are you going, Tony?
Well, he's not in the room right now. He's getting coffee. He'll be back shortly.
But I'm going to, it's on CBS on Sunday, so I picked the CBS game. And then the next week I'm going to Denver to see Peyton Manning play whoever they play. So that's my next 2 weeks. And then the championship game, I'll go to the AFC championship game because it's on CBS. So that's my next 3 weeks mapped out, then on to the Pro Bowl and on to the Super Bowl.
Who's winning the whole thing? Who's the Super Bowl team?
You know, I picked before the season, I picked Green Bay and Denver. And I'm one of those guys, when I pick it, as long as it's alive, I'm going to stick with it. And so I still think that Green Bay and Denver can make it. You know, I wrote this today, JP. It's too easy, I think, in my mind, and yet I'm guilty of it as much as anybody, to think that the four top seeds are going to be two of the teams in the, you know, two of the teams are going to come from the four seeds. Because Green Bay and Seattle look like the class of the NFC, although I think Dallas is pretty darn good and can make a run at them. And then the AFC, it's Denver, New England, and I really don't see a team making a run at either one of those two. So
I disagree with you, Pete, but we'll talk about that after Copy Fax.
You know what, though, Tony? I say that, and then I remember 1996 when Denver was, you know, unbeatable, and you guys went in there and beat them. And we, in only two times in the last 20 years, including last year, have the top two seeds played in the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I say that, but I'm with you. I think, it's, you know, somebody's going to get hot at the right time.
Tony, by the way, where are you going for the playoffs?
I'm actually not working week one. I'll be in New England week two, and then at one of the championship games, in the third week.
There you go. All right. We were talking about that with Pete coming up. You know, now it's time for the Copy Fax Face-Off, the season standings. Pete Prisco, 9. Tony Buscelli, 8. This is the final show. It's a must-win situation for Tony Buscelli this evening.
I'm nervous.
Pete Prisco is probably not confident, and he hasn't been the last month and a half.
Oh, he calls all kinds of shenanigans. He's a crybaby. He loses before it even starts because he makes excuses.
Well, they got to make it look good for you to the end. I know what that is.
So here's the scenario. If Buscelli wins, then there's a playoff question.
Oh, yeah.
If Prisco wins, it's all over. And the question tonight, Ndamukong Suh. Suspended one game for stomping on Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. He'll miss the playoff game. Is missing the playoff game right, or should it be for the next regular season game? And, Tony, you get to go first since you won last week.
You know, listen, the guy has a terrible track record. He's, you know, what he's done on the field has been egregious throughout his career. And while the league came out in their comments basically not referencing anything else besides this one offense, so you would think as he goes to the appeal he has a chance to get it overturned, they had to do something based on what he did. If he would have just, on the first step, I think it was accidental when he steps on Aaron Rodgers' leg. The second one is obviously purposeful. He obviously stands on it. Years ago, you would have gotten away with it because the cameras and the attention that those things happened, and those things happened all the time, and guys still probably get away with them. But because of his track record, you had to do something. I don't like him being suspended for the playoff game because it's the playoffs, and I want to see the best players out there. I wish they'd just fine him some abhorrent amount of money, a huge fine, and let him play the game because that's what you want. As an NFL fan, that's what the league wants. They want the best players. They want the stars on the field when it matters the most, and this is when it matters the most. So, yes, in a perfect world, my first choice would be just to fine him a huge number and let him play, which they might do with the appeal process because Ted Cottrell is going to be the one who hears the suspension. There's precedent. He did that with Ed Reed, just kept the fine but let him play the game. Or if you can do it where you fine him for the following season for a regular season game and let him be in the playoffs, that would be my second choice. My third choice is not letting him play in this playoff game. That's just – it's not good for the game. It's not good for anyone. But they had to do something because of his past.
So, again, you never answered the question. What's your answer? You have every question. You have every answer that you could possibly have.
No, I did answer. I gave my three choices. My first choice would be just a huge fine. And my second choice would be.
What was the question?
The question is, should be, okay, if to answer the question, no, I would not want him fined for this playoff game. I'd fine him for the first regular season game. If that's the only two choices I have.
Pete?
So since I got sent out the tweet that I sent out a little while ago that JP read, and that's why he got this question out there, then I got to take the case the other side, okay? Which I don't believe in, so I'm just going to take the loss.
He's conceding defeat.
Did you really, Pete? What? I give you my word. Oh. I never saw your tweet. Did you tweet out that he shouldn't have been?
I don't think he should be. I'll be honest with you, Tony. I agree with you. Why should you suspend him for a playoff game when all you're doing, are you really hurting him or are you hurting the team? To me, that's more of a penalty to his team than it is to him. And not only that, if you suspend him for the playoff game, it only costs him $20,000+. If you suspend him for the regular season game, it's going to cost him some $700,000. So are you really hurting him? Yeah, you're hurting him. He's not playing a playoff game, but hurt him where it counts. Hit him in the wallet. I mean, you know, that's the other side of it. Nobody pays attention to that side either. But you can't tell me, a player, yeah, he's suspended. No one is suspended for a playoff game. But if you're getting suspended for a playoff game, it's a lot easier to swallow when you're losing $20,000+ than if you're losing $700,000.
That's a good point.
I think that's the first time that we've had a concession. He basically said, I'm smarter, I'm better. Because we've been put in situations
you read
before.
My tweet.
No, I never read your tweet. I give you my word. Never did. Because there's been situations where I had to go second and had to argue something I didn't believe in. At least I was man enough, Pete, to argue for the spirit of the game and hang in there. You're a quitter. You showed your real colors right there.
And Tony Boselli, and I tell you what, there is a penalty point on this, too. Because, Pete, if you would have made any type of argument at all and tried to go against your tweet, you would have won. But since you conceded 2 points to Boselli,
yes!
Tony
Victory!
Boselli has come from behind.
I won for the year. Yes.
10-9.
You know what that's like? You fix it for the kid in the class that can't, like, he can't play any sports, so you fix it so he wins one. That's what that's like.
Champion.
All you had to do was say, I disagree.
I'd like to thank everybody. I called it at the beginning of the year. I said that I'd beat Pete Briscoe. And when it mattered the most, like a big-time quarterback in a two-minute drive, I delivered. And Pete, like a pretender, you crumbled.
I didn't crumble. Because you already crumbled. Saw my tweet. How could I argue against the tweet I sent out?
Well, that would have been bold, and you would have been a winner if you would have been bold, Pete.
You know what that's like? That's like when I make a pick on Monday, and then on Thursday, if I made another pick, and then everybody goes, well, you pick both sides. You can't do that. You got to have it both ways.
Champion!
You know, I like that. Okay. You're going to stand by your word.
You're a loser, Pete. Though.
Huh? I'm not a loser.
You're a loser, Pete.
We tied.
No,
we tied.
I got 2 points.
It was
10-9.
Because
penalty.
You conceded it's
that,
a penalty.
You changed the rules. Then.
No, he so penalized you.
No, you conceded.
No, he changed the rules. The rules were
first ever concession.
We would tie,
that's a penalty.
And there would be another. No, there would be
you know
another
what,
question.
Pete? Because I'm a competitor, I'll concede the extra point I got from you quitting and being a quitter, and I'll go to the playoffs.
Oh gosh, and I have to figure out a question now, guys. Wait a minute.
Bring it on, Pete. Because I'm not afraid of you.
We'll take a timeout and come back on the other side
for the playoffs.
With the
Pete,
playoff,
you're a quitter. You're soft. I've always known it. I proved it. I called the shot. I said I'd win. And even after winning, because I love competition, I want another. I'll give you another shot at the title.
See if you can read a couple more of my tweets to find something.
Never,
that you'll,
read your tweet.
Go long in the fuel efficient Ford Escape. See your Southern Ford dealer today. Proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. The playoff round of the CopyFax face-off after this. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Yes, playoffs. The CopyFax face-off. But I'll tell you what, there is controversy tonight because
the quitter Prisco.
Pete could have won with any type of argument against his tweet, but he chose to stand by his tweet, and we stand by
him.
Kids,
there's a lesson there because Pete, so you know, JP was going to give it to you no matter what because he had no second question ready.
Right.
And so it didn't matter what you said, you were going to win. So to all you kids out there listening, don't be Pete Prisco and quit before you even try, because sometimes just by trying, you win.
But if you quit,
you'll never know.
Stand by your conviction. I said what I said earlier today, and I wasn't going to back away from that.
You had to do is say, I said this earlier today, but let me give you the argument why I believe they did what was justified. That's all you had to say.
Well, how could I say that he should be suspended for next year's game, first game next year, and not the I couldn't argue that. You couldn't make the argument.
When you persevere and you never give up or quit, you find a way to get it done, Pete. You're a quitter. So and because I compete and never give up, we're going to go on to a playoff round.
Okay, so the situation now, it is tied at 9.
Does CopyFax have to pay us more because we're doing an extra one?
That's a good question, actually. We'll have to talk to the front office about
that. Here's what the playoff question should be.
Okay.
And Tony could go first.
I had a question ready, but go ahead.
Should Tony Boselli be in the Hall of Fame? You go first.
We're not doing that, Pete. We're not doing that.
You know what I'll say? I'll argue it and say yes. And then you can argue
it. Yeah. Let's not do that.
The playoff question for the season championship. Jim Harbaugh is done in San Francisco. Reports have him already signing the deal to become Michigan's next head coach. The question is, would he be better off staying in the NFL or chasing the college money? And Tony gets to go first since he won last time.
Listen, I understand that he went to Michigan. They offered him a huge deal, $48 million over 6 years or 49, whatever it was, and going back to his alma mater. And sometimes, you know, nothing better than going home. But here's the reality. It's a mistake, and he will regret it at the end of the day. Jim Harbaugh is the ultimate competitor. And while winning a national title and winning a college playoff, which I'm not sure you can do at Michigan, maybe you can, maybe you can't, still pales in comparison to holding up the Lombardi Trophy. His brother has one. He wasn't able to get it done in San Francisco. He got close. And his mindset and his makeup as an individual, he wants the ultimate prize in football, and that's winning the title. He was close as the quarterback of Indy, of getting there, almost beating Pittsburgh in the AFC title game to get to the Super Bowl, couldn't get it done. He will regret it. He could have got just as much money or close to that much money from several NFL teams. Oakland wanted to talk to him. The Jets wanted to talk to him. And the Falcons wanted to talk to him. He was sitting in the catbird seat. He could have negotiated against all three of them and got as much money, been in the NFL, not having to kiss up and recruit 17, 18-year-old kids and tell them how great they are and travel over the country throughout the year to do that and make phone calls and tweet and social media and all the other ridiculousness that comes with recruiting, and been an NFL coach to chase the ultimate prize. And the competitor that he is, he will regret it, and it will end up being a mistake for Jim Harbaugh.
Look, he can. You know what he had to do? He had to make sure he had room in his moving van for all those championships he won in the NFL and in college already. The guy is a heck of a football coach. But before anybody goes off and says he's Bill Belichick, let's slow down on this thing. He did a great job at Stanford. He did a good job with the 49ers. But let's be honest, Tony, his offense is a college offense. It's not his power run game, predictable. It caught up to him. And now he's going for the money. And I love it. Look, he took the money. He's going back to his alma mater. He's a perfect college coach. He'll work his butt off recruiting. He'll get the best recruits. You know what? Ohio State gets the best recruits now in the Big Ten. Well, you know who's going to get the best recruits now? Michigan. Because Harbaugh will work his butt off and get that program back to relevance again. And he'll love every bit of it. And he'll be proclaimed the next, Bo Schembechler at Michigan. They'll prop him up, make statues for him. And you know what? He'll win a national championship, too. Or he might not. Just depends. But I think it's the right fit for him.
Well, I think we have a decision.
To the victors.
Do I have time for
any rebuttal?
My rebuttal is this.
Rebuttal. Yeah.
Let me tell you what. Who's a bigger deal?
Who's the bigger deal?
Vince Lombardi? Did you just give it to him? Oh, my God.
It's all over.
Yeah.
Over.
Yes, the champion of the world. We are the champions of the world, and next year we'll be the champions of college football.
Oh, Pete.
At least I didn't quit.
In a stunning upset.
Never give up.
Not really an upset.
Never give up. Don't be Pete Briscoe.
Never give up.
Don't be Pete Briscoe, and don't be a quitter.
Stand by your convictions, everybody. Stand by.
Tony, you had it won. You didn't have to give him another chance.
You know what, though?
And you did, and you lost.
I love to compete. I'd rather compete and lose than quit and never feel the thrill of victory.
Boy.
Like Pete,
so you know what? You competed, and I'm walking off with the title. What's that tell you?
Hey, Pete, I'm not making excuses. Even though you quit, and I had to give it to you, and give you another chance.
Even though the rules were there was going to be a second question.
And though you
amended the rules,
I didn't amend the rules.
Oh, that was a deep rule back in the back of the book.
I didn't amend it. That was JP.
If there was
and the fact that Joe felt
there was an extra point,
and the fact that Joe felt sorry for you. And didn't want to hear you whine, and we're hoping you come back, and we figured we'd give you the victory.
Hey, all I know is that the good people at Copy Fact should love our face off because we've gotten a lot of mileage out of that this year. Can we get a raise,
Copy Facts?
I'm the champ. They should have like a Copy Fact, like put a sign out. Pete Prisco defeated Tony Vaselli again.
Wow. How about that? Let's look around the – okay, so congratulations, Pete. You're a winner.
You're a quitter, but you won.
Quitter, but a winner. And
quitter, but a winner.
Let's look around the National Football League. Of course, Black Monday in the National Football League. Pete, are there any surprises with all these changes in coaching?
No, but I'll say this. I'm a little surprised that Mike Smith got it in Atlanta and Thomas Dimitroff didn't. They came in as a package deal. The roster has no talent on the defensive side of the football other than Desmond Trufant that was on the field Sunday. William Moore's a good player. Weatherspoon's a pretty good player, but they weren't on the field. And I think that falls at the lap of the general manager. And, look, I like both of those guys. I have great respect for both of them. But if you're going to fire the head coach and keep the general manager, I don't know what kind of message that sends. So I'm glad Thomas Stoke has his job, but I'm not happy that Mike had to go and he stayed.
Yeah, I agree. I was surprised. I thought they'd both get it after losing the game the way they did, and especially the way that roster looks right now on the defensive side of the ball. Listen, they went all in on Julio Jones and traded multiple draft picks and pretty much gave a draft away for that one player, thinking he was the missing piece to win a Super Bowl. They almost did it. In fact, they probably should have beat San Francisco that year to get to the Super Bowl. They did not do it, and it's been downhill since then. And a big part of it is because of injuries and a defensive roster that's not very talented.
I want to answer this, Tony.
And an offensive line that's below average.
Yeah, I want to throw this around. We threw this around today. If the Falcons get the 10 yards or the pass interference call against San Francisco, go in and win the Super Bowl, go in and get to the Super Bowl, not just get there. Is Mike Smith fired today?
No.
All right. So think about that for a second. 10 yards separates Mike Smith from being employed by the Atlanta Falcons and not being employed. Pretty incredible when you think about it.
That's how this league's been in its entirety, especially as of the last 25 years. I mean, it's a game of inches a lot of times, and near misses and drop balls and caught balls and everything else, getting 2 feet in bounds and not being able to do that. difference of winning games, losing games, and keeping jobs and getting fired.
Let's talk about the Cleveland Browns and what a scene that is now after
Well, Johnny Manziel said he didn't have a party.
You believe him, Pete?
Well, if he didn't have it, somebody he knew had it, there was some kind of party, and now he's sitting there saying, admitting that he needs to change the way he does things. Okay, your rookie season's gone. And as bad as Johnny Manziel has been, the word out of Cleveland is Justin Gilbert's been even worse. The other first-round pick, the players are killing him. And you know if the players are piling on a rookie, then how bad that is. Then you got Josh Gordon on top of it. Hey, you gotta give Mike Pettine, first-year coach, credit. You know what? He suspended the guy. Didn't let him play. I like that. But, you know, next year, it's you know what? There's no tolerance. One strike and you're done. That's the way I would put it for all those guys. It's a bad situation.
It's a bad sign when you're hopefully what you were planning and you drafted him to be your future franchise quarterback has to be picked up by security to go make treatment. That's the one position in that building that has to be stable, has to be the leader, and has to do all those things right. Listen, a wide receiver, you can live with it. Different positions, guys, you know, skirting the edges and maybe doing some things that, you know, being late here or there or whatever. You don't like any of it. But the one guy who can't do that is the quarterback. And so far this year, Johnny Manziel is one big just accident, just a huge mess. It's a train wreck. I mean, the entire year, from what he said, what he has done, to the partying, to the antics, to the offseason. Is it all fair? No, but that's the media, the social media we live in today. And guess what? Tom Brady, Drew Brees, go down the list of quarterbacks, all live in the same social media world that he does. Russell Wilson, all of them. And you don't see them doing it. You don't see them making those mistakes, saying those dumb things, missing treatments, missing stuff. The leader of the organization in the locker room is the quarterback. And he right now has not proven to me he can do it. And if I'm the Cleveland Browns, I'm scared to death that I missed on that pick. And it sounds like maybe I'm on Justin Gilbert as well.
Yeah, and you know what? He should be shown the cautionary tale of one Ryan Leaf. And that's what Johnny Manziel needs to look at right now. It's time to
reevaluate. He's not as talented as Ryan Leaf was, Pete.
No, he's not. But his whole career was derailed by being a knucklehead off the field. He had tons of talent, and this kid, I don't know if he has that kind of talent, but in terms of work ethic,
he doesn't.
He's heading down that same path.
It's embarrassing that he'd come out and I'm going to take my job more serious now. What do you think this was, a redshirt year? Give me a break.
I mean, and reading the things about Justin Gilbert, it's even worse with him. I don't know. There's a little bit of a sense of entitlement of these kids coming into the NFL nowadays, and that's why when you get one who loves it and works at it, you're so thrilled that you have that.
What's wrong with Justin Gilbert? What's his issue, Pete? I haven't been paying attention to him.
Yeah, I just doesn't put the work in. Doesn't care. You know, lackadaisical. Not studying the tape. Not doing all the work that you're taking at home. Not practicing hard. Every bit of it. And every. Hey, Tony, and you know this because you've been around the league and you play. When veterans are starting to call out a rookie in his first year, publicly, that's a red flag.
You mentioned Tom Brady a moment ago, restructured his deal, took out the skill guarantees, and it frees up $24 million in space for the Patriots.
And got a million-dollar a year raise.
That's right.
So listen, they're not going to cut. Yeah, they're not going to cut him. They did some accounting work and some language to free up money. They're not cutting Tom Brady. My point is, that's all he allowed them to do is cut him without having to pay him. They took the skill guarantee out of it. There's still an injury guarantee. He got a pay raise. They're not getting rid of Tom Brady over the next 3 years, no matter what. So he did nothing. What he did was smart. He got a raise and freed up cap money for them to sign players back. It's genius.
Yeah,
his wife makes $80 million a year. Who cares?
And the other thing,
and
Tony,
she's a supermodel. My goodness. The guy's got it going on.
Yeah, let's not portray this as he's doing good for the team.
He got a raise, Pete.
Right. He's doing good for him, which he should be doing. So, you know, I know people, the last time they said, Tom didn't take as much money as he should have. And believe me, when you look at the deal, he took a lot of money. He just restructured it and moved it around. It's, you know, you get it here, you get it there. He's still getting his money. He's still going to get paid. But this is a smart thing for him. It's a smart thing for the team.
It's very smart. Listen, let's not start having parades for Tom Brady and his, you know, generosity to the Patriots. He should be paid well. He's one of the best quarterbacks ever to play the game. But he's doing just fine. I mean, come on. Let's just line up his the least amount of money he needs to worry about is what he's making from the Patriots.
That's right.
I mean, yeah. I'd be more worried about making sure my wife kept her job. She gets paid a lot more.
We'll come back in a moment and look at the playoffs. Yes, the playoffs in the National Football League.
The greatest time of the year, and there's nothing better than NFL playoffs. One and done, baby. Here we go.
Back in a moment, final segment of Jaguars Monday for the season on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HennanyAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. The official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. Final segment of Jaguars Monday for the season, and it is time to look at the postseason. We start off with games on Saturday at 4:20 Eastern Time. The Cardinals and the Panthers in Charlotte. Pete, who you got?
You know, I think it's easy to sit here and say that Carolina's on a roll and they're going to go, you know, at home, they're going to win that game and win it easily. But that Arizona defense is still too good. I think they'll find a way. I know Ryan Lindley played better against the 49ers. He's still not good. But I think Arizona will find a way to, with that defense, get a turnover or two and go in there and sneak away and get the victory.
Boy, I think it's going to be a very, very close game. The Carolina defense is starting to play better, too, and I think it's going to make it very difficult. They got six sacks against Matt Ryan. They're playing better. They run the ball well. I just think the quarterback's going to be the biggest difference. In the playoffs, if I'm betting, I'm betting on Cam Newton over Ryan Lindley, so I'm going to go with the Carolina Panthers.
That evening, 8:15 Eastern Time on NBC Saturday night, the Ravens go to Pittsburgh to face the Steelers, and Bell has a little bit of a knee issue now, Pete.
Yeah, and that's a concern. It's a hyperextension. It's not going to shelve him for the playoffs, but it could shelve him for this week. And he is such a big part of what they do, not just in the running game, but in the passing game. But for me, this all comes down to a couple things. First, I think the Steelers' defense is playing significantly better than it was earlier in the season. They're getting players back. On the offensive side of the ball, it's all about Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown lighting up a secondary that's not very good for the Baltimore Ravens. And so I think in the end, I think Pittsburgh will find a way to win what I think will be a shootout this week.
I don't think Le'Veon Bell will be a factor in this game at all. But I like the Pittsburgh Steelers. I give Mike Munchak a ton of credit. That offensive line that was atrocious early in the year has been playing very good football the last half of the season. They're doing a really good job of protecting Ben Roethlisberger, giving running room for Le'Veon Bell. He won't be there. I said, I think it was last week, Pete and I were talking, I'd take Dez Bryant over Antonio Brown. I changed my mind. Antonio Brown right now is the best receiver in football. He is absolutely dominant, and that secondary for the Ravens is atrocious. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be going to win, and I think Le'Veon Bell gets healthy throughout the playoffs. And Pete, what we were talking about earlier, the 1 and 2 seeds don't always match up in the title game, and the 1 seeds don't match up in the Super Bowl very often. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers could be a team that would be very dangerous in the playoffs, and look out for them in the AFC.
Wow! Even with that defense, huh? Even with that defense,
no one plays defense besides the Cardinals and the Seahawks anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
Sunday, you'll be at this game, Bengals-Colts, Pete. That's an Indy. What you got?
For some reason, I'm just not sold on the Colts as a football team. I love Andrew Luck, and I think he's helped hide a bunch of their warts all season long. They feasted on a bad division. I know they're at home. The last time they played the Bengals in the regular season, it was 27-0. But that Bengals team couldn't run the football. This Bengals team can run the football. Jeremy Hill has got it cranked up. I think he's going to run the ball, keep the ball out of Andrew Luck's hands, and I think the Bengals are good enough on defense to slow down Andrew Luck. I think the Bengals go in there and win the game outright.
The Bengals have the least amount of sacks in the NFL this year, Pete. Am I correct in that?
Yes.
They're awful rushing the passer, and if you give Andrew Luck time back there. He's going to carve you up. I think, listen, the Bengals will do better than they did the first time. They will score points. But Andy Dalton, boy, he has had an awful year. He was awful the other night, throwing the ball to the wrong guy too many times. I like the Colts in this game. I don't think either team, whoever wins, I think it'll be the Colts will go very far. They're going to lose next week no matter who they play. But I think the Colts win at home.
4:40 Eastern Time Sunday. The Lions and the Cowboys. Watch out this week for the Sue appeal and how that affects the stopping the run of the Cowboys. What you got on this one, Pete, in Dallas?
Yeah, I think the Lions' defense is very good, and they've been much better against the pass than they have in years past. But I just think that this Cowboys' offense is clicking. Romo's playing great football. They can run the ball. The offensive line's good. Their defense, you know, Marinelli's done a great job with the defense. The Lions' offense isn't what it used to be. So when you shake it all out, you know what that means? I think Dallas will not only win this game, but they're going to be a dangerous, dangerous team moving forward.
I think the Cowboys win as well, and especially if Ndamukong Suh doesn't play. If Ndamukong Suh doesn't play, I don't think it's even close. I think the Cowboys crank it up, and they can run past and do whatever they want. If Suh does play, that run defense will slow down DeMarco Murray. But I agree with Pete. Romo's just too good right now. And it's not like that Lions offense has been great this year.
There you have it. Picks for this coming weekend, the wild card games of the National Football League.
Pete, who you have in the Super Bowl? Let's pick our Super Bowl before we leave.
I picked before the season, I picked Green Bay and Denver, and I'm going to stick with it. I hate, wow, you know, changing. So you know what?
Okay, but just looking at the playoffs right now, you know, I'm not asking you to change your convictions and all that.
I'm not. If
you had to start fresh today, you're picking Denver in the AFC.
Yes, I think they can go into New England and win.
You're an idiot.
Okay, keep telling me I'm an idiot when they're in the Super Bowl and maybe even hoisting a trophy up this year.
I'm going to go with the – I hate to go chalk, but right
you're
now –
You're going chalk. You're going New England, Seattle, just like you always do. Chalk.
I'm going to go New England, Dallas. I think the Cowboys can go into Lambeau or Seattle – and beat either one of those teams the way they play offense. And they're playing great football right now, and that defense is not very good. But I think it's just the Cowboys' year after years of being irrelevant. I think it's Cowboys, Patriots in the Super Bowl.
You know, that wouldn't surprise me at all, to be honest with you. I like Dallas. I think the makeup of that team, and I'm a big Romo guy. I've always been a Romo guy. I think, to me, he's underappreciated. He's having a phenomenal year. In the last four games, he's been fantastic. So that wouldn't shock me, but I just picked Green Bay. And I think when it all boils down, I think it's going to come down to Rodgers winning at Seattle. I just think this is his year to get back and be in the Super Bowl again.
Yeah, I actually don't think Green Bay can go to Seattle and win. And my head tells me to pick Seattle because they're playing the best defense in the NFL right now. And Russell Wilson just makes plays when it counts the most, and they can run the ball against anybody. But going 1-1, chalk just does not happen very often, so that's why I'm going Cowboys.
Twice in 20 years, and it happened last year, so the odds are against it. The other thing, Tony, I'll tell you what, I watched his game yesterday against St. Louis, and I know St. Louis has a good pass rush, but boy, his offensive line was terrible. If he couldn't move, if he was a quarterback who didn't move, he would have gotten dumped in another four or five times. He was hit a ton yesterday.
But he can move. Let's not forget that.
But that's going to be a good... But still, that offensive line has to be a concern moving forward for them.
Pete, it has been a hell of a year. Great job, and enjoyed working with you.
Where does the time go? I don't understand this whole season. It went so fast.
Football season goes fast, doesn't it?
No, it really does. But you know what? Maybe we should get together in the off season and do this.
I like it. Hey, we'll talk to you soon, Pete. Appreciate it.
And, you got it, fellas.
We'll talk to you down
the
line.
Have a good New Year.
Happy New Year's, Pete.
Right.
Pete Prisco.
Same to you guys.
CBS Sports senior NFL columnist each and every week with
junior
us.
Junior in height, but senior in profession.
Also senior in profession, Fat Tony and Paul Spicer. I don't know if that's the right term for those guys, but they're coming up next with timeout no matter what they're doing. What's up, guys?
I'll take it. Now, I heard the fallout from a certain phone call earlier tonight. Was it Terrence that called again, JP? I know he called the post game yesterday. He called again with that Beatles.
He slipped by me. I wasn't paying attention.
JP, you got to play goalie sometimes, buddy.
Apparently, yeah.
You can't let that kind of thing in. And Big Bo,
Bo loved it. Don't let him fool you. He loved
it. I know. I was listening to the reaction of Tony there to what happened with the caller who said that Zane Beatles should be moved to left tackle. and Jokel moved inside to left guard, which is just – it's asinine. That
guy bumped his head.
Yeah.
I mean, they really think Zane Beatles can play left tackle.
That's about as dumb as it gets. But what did you think of the offensive line in general? I know you're going to go back and assign grades, whatever, as we get into the offseason here, Tony. But what did you think of how they performed in yesterday's game specifically?
I mean, listen, when you don't get much offensive production and don't have much consistency, I think it always starts up front. I think the offensive line is the most important position group of the offense, and you could argue of the entire team. I think they set the tempo, and so overall I think the consistency starts with the quarterback, number one, and then after that it's the offensive line, and they got to be better. And they're very young, and I think they will be better. And so it was not a great day for anybody yesterday on the offensive side of the ball.
I felt like, and we talked about this a lot, but that they did pretty well against J.J. Watt and Houston about a month ago. They did all right against them.
It felt like sacks.
Yesterday was so much worse.
He had three sacks the first time.
It was so much. Yeah, but the three sacks he had
freebies,
last time.
Pete.
Right.
He earned three sacks yesterday. He had two unblocked sacks. I know you defensive linemen can't figure that out.
He went right around. He went right around your boy.
No, he did not.
Okay, he went right around your boy yesterday.
I said, Paul, do you listen? I said the first game.
Ooh.
I said the first game he went unblocked twice.
Yeah, because he knows these boots are coming. You guys.
Oh, give me a break. One time Blake Bortles slipped and he touched him. I know how you defensive linemen work. That doesn't count as
a sack, baby.
No, it's not.
Sack is a sack.
That's your problem.
It is.
We could go on all night with this argument, but
that's why they say defensive guys aren't the smartest, not the sharpest tools in the shed.
That's right. There you have it.
You're talking about defensive backs.
On that note, that is it for the season for Jaguars Monday. We appreciate it, Tony. Good working with you,
man,
as always. And Tony Baselli, too. And time out with Paul Spicer and Pat Tony starts
JP,
right now.
It's been a pleasure.
You too, buddy.